You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting across from me is my co-host, Alex. Thank you for being here, bud.
Thanks for having me.
So today we've got a bunch of different topics. We missed a week and we got called out for it. Which is good. It means people are listening. So thank you for listening.
Our fan of at least one.
Yes. There's someone is out there. Whoever you are. Actually, we know who you are. So thank you for tuning in. Both of you. So today we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. And the truth is we didn't get to talk about the 4th of July at all. And I wanted to talk about it specifically because I think of holidays in the U.S., I can't think of one that is more patriotic than the 4th of July, although it's also probably the most anti-government holiday that we have. It's about declaring our independence from tyranny over a tyrannical government. And you could kind of say in many ways that the Libertarian Party is aligned with that vision and following that through to the end. Would you agree?
Oh, I would definitely agree. And I hope that people who subscribe to our emails, the five of you,
yes,
that you saw that we sent out an email blast commemorating both the Declaration of Independence ratification by the Second Continental Congress. Oh, boy, that was fun to say.
That was a long sentence.
And basically illustrating how there's at least 5 points that I personally found in there that seem very relevant to what the Libertarian Party is fighting for today. And I won't go through those now, but I'm sure you saw it in your email, and I would encourage you to read through those and kind of decide for yourself if I was telling the truth about whether or not you see that there's very clear alignment between some of those grievances that are listed out in the Declaration and the grievances that the LP is fighting for today.
Yep. So while today is no longer our Independence Day, we can celebrate it every single day by bearing down on the values that we all share in personal freedom, liberty, personal property, all that good stuff that we talk about here every single week, except for the week we just missed. So another thing that I have as far as a talking point for today, and I really want to get your opinion on this because as far as political strategy goes, I feel like you are the expert at the table.
Oh, thank you.
So Austin Peterson, previous libertarian presidential candidate, and I personally will say I think he's a really smart guy. I think he's got his stuff together. He has recently decided to change his platform to be a Republican running for Senate. Now, under that, it doesn't look like he's actually changed any of his policies or his values. None of that has changed, simply the labeling on that. What is your opinion on that?
Well, speaking personally and not as a representative of the party in any way, I honestly think that there are so many people who see the Republican Party as a vehicle for liberty. And I don't think that they're wrong. There have been successes of libertarians running under the Republican banner. We haven't really seen it on the Democrat side, but there have been some successes. A lot of people who have come into the movement, myself included, came into the movement because of some of the things we were hearing by people like Ron Paul. Right. If it wasn't for his sort of voice out there, I don't know that I would have even known what a small L libertarian was, let alone found out that there was an entire party devoted to this idea. And so even though I disagreed with his, belief that advancing liberty is best in the Republican Party, and I personally think it's best in the Libertarian Party, I can still respect the push to promote liberty regardless of which party you're in.
Yeah.
That said, I don't think it's actually a particularly smart move. And this is mainly, and I know it sucks, but, unfortunately, U.S. Senate races, it comes down to money. And, he has a sizable war chest, $100,000, pretty decent. It was right around theirs. And that's not nothing. He could certainly win a variety of local races in Missouri that way and be elected, I believe, and be representing libertarian ideas for Missourians this next year. I truly believe that he has the capability to win at the state level. At the federal level, I honestly don't think that establishment Republicans are going to let him through the primary. I don't think that they're going to see someone who raised $100,000 for a $4 million race. I don't think that the RNC is dumb by any means. I don't think that the RCCC is dumb by any means. And I believe that they are going to find an establishment candidate who has worked his way up, or her, but most likely it looks like a his right now. And this is someone who can take on the Democrat in the race. And so it's very interesting to me personally, just looking at the fact that the Democrat Senator there is so weak and is seen as someone the Republicans can go after. I just don't see them giving that up to somebody who just last year was running for the Libertarian Party presidential nominee and would have stood in opposition to the president and did, in fact, rail the president on many issues. I just don't think that the Republican – I don't think there's enough Never Trump Republican base of support for him to make it through there. So I think he'll do very well considering all of the factors of, you know, $100,000, you know, of not being an establishment Republican. But I don't see him getting through the primary. And that means that his voice to voters will be cut short in, I believe it's June of next year. I don't know exactly when the primary is for Missouri. But, you know, it's unfortunate because he is a good voice. He's well-spoken. He understands messaging, if nothing else. And his platform, though right-leaning in some respects, is pretty solid.
Yeah. I'm divided on this in a big way because I don't want to play party politics. So part of that, being aligned with that, is me saying, I shouldn't care what banner, what flag you're waving. I should care about the ideals you have, right? And I do want more people with similar ideals as I have in office. I do want that. On the other hand, this almost does the opposite of what we want to be doing as far as pulling people from the Republicans and from the Democrats to our party. It almost is forcing libertarians to vote Republican to try and get another person in that, to get a couple more people that can actually play the game with the big boys in office. So I am deeply divided on the strategy. But
it also really hurts the Libertarian Party's messaging because it conflates conservatarian, if you will, ideas with libertarian ideas. And so conservatarians are either one of two types that I've found. They either care only about fiscal issues and not about social issues, or on the areas where they do have social issues they push, they are not in line with the libertarian ideology of more freedom, less government.
Is there an opposite version of that? I've never heard conservatarian before. Is there only caring about the social issues and not about the financial ones?
You know, that's relatively new to the party. I honestly think that the party has widely drawn from
Republicans.
Democrats, from Republicans in the past. And I think that it's only with the how horrible Hillary Clinton was and how dirty the DNC was that people are starting to wake up in the Democrat Party and go, this party doesn't – they're not even liberal, let alone stand for what I stand for. So I think there are quite a few. I think Gary Johnson's messaging to the left, although it angered many right-leaning libertarians, was effective. He received – over five times the percentage that Ron Paul received when he ran for the presidential election in the 80s and as a libertarian. And so, you know, I have to believe that trying to grab people who align with us on social issues is an effective strategy right now. And mainly I think it's because even Republicans, even though they run under a fiscal conservative banner, there's no real incentive for them to be a fiscal conservative when they're there. Look at Nevada. There was no punishment to Sandoval or any of the Republicans that voted for Faraday Future, which fell through just this week. And who could have predicted, right?
Why don't you explain that to everybody?
Oh, for those who aren't aware, the Apex site in North Las Vegas was selected by the Nevada legislature and I believe the governor's economic development council or some similar division as a place to bring in more high-tech industry, this sort of thing. And they courted a company called Faraday Future, which was going to build, I believe, a battery factory is what it was, right there in the Apex site. And just this week, they announced that they would not be building their factory. They will finish developing the site, but they will not be building up that factory, which means, sure, the construction jobs of building that are still going to be there for a few more months. But once that's completed, there won't be the hundreds of factory jobs that these people were hoping for. There won't be the tens or maybe even hundreds of engineering jobs that these people might have hoped for. And the whole reason that Faraday Future was given tax subsidies, basically told they would not have to pay their fair share of taxes here in Nevada. They could continue developing without paying that. And it was to the tune of, I believe, $500 million. And again, we keep pissing away $500 million in this state. Meanwhile, we convince voters that somehow we had to pass the margin tax. Voters voted it down three times in a row, and then the governor rebranded it as the commerce tax, raised the taxes by 2% of all gross revenues, not profit, revenue. So you could be losing money and still owe the government, which is just like kicking you when you're down. And they did that to all small businesses in Nevada. So what is the governor really saying, right? What is the Nevada legislature really saying when they do this? What they're saying is that Nevada small businesses don't matter. Only Tesla matters. Only Faraday Future matters. Only the Raiders matter, right? They're only saying that the big boys, the billionaires that come in here and want tax bailouts for their special pet projects, they matter. But if you're trying to build a business from the ground up here in the state of Nevada, we don't want you. That's the message it sends. And this is, you know, again, sorry, a bit of a tangent, but, you know, this is why people don't care about fiscal issues, because, you know, even the Republicans continuously run as fiscal conservatives, and they do anything but when they get into office. And it's truly sad. I know a lot of Republicans that are very frustrated with their party, very frustrated with what's happening there, but they've yet to manage to convince their party to even be fiscally conservative. So building any kind of coalition with them at this point seems like it's not very beneficial, because that's the part we agreed with them on, was the fiscal, right, being responsible with the government's money and not spending it irresponsibly, not putting it on massive conferences, not giving it as bailouts to the banks in 2008, right? These are the issues that libertarians and conservatives are supposed to agree on, and yet when they get people into office, the first thing they do is they look for ways to spend money. I mean, even Senator Heller, who campaigned on a full repeal of Obamacare, is now on the fence saying, well, we got to replace it with something. I don't know when replace became instead of repeal. I mean, for 6 years, I heard nothing but repeal Obamacare. And now, I mean, so anyway, so long story short, Democrats so far on the few social issues we agree on, we have been able to work with them. Criminal justice reform. Legalization of marijuana, decriminalization of other drugs. There's even a bill in Washington, I believe it is, to decriminalize cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. Why? Because putting people in prison for a drug addiction doesn't solve the problem. These are things we can be building and working toward as libertarians. And fiscal issues, people's eyes glaze over. In fact, I probably put 10 people to sleep just now. So
I'm sorry, what was that? I was...
So, you know, that's my point, though, is that we keep thinking to ourselves, oh, we have to use the Republican Party as the vehicle for liberty. But as soon as even if Austin does get elected, he'll face the same pressures that Rand Paul, Thomas Massey, Justin Amash, right? These are people who continuously face pressures from the Republican big donors, the Republican CCC, which is the Congressional Campaign Committee, I believe, is their acronym. These are the organizations that can promise them the millions they need to win or the nothing they need and back another primary opponent. And so this is what's so dangerous, right, is that even if he does get elected, if he doesn't play nice with the Trump Republicans, he's going to find himself on the outs very quickly.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a little earlier, you mentioned marijuana in that.
Yes, I did.
And I really appreciated that you brought it into Nevada, because we talk a lot about national news, and we're going to go back to some national stuff soon. But the truth is we cover national stuff, and everybody covers national news because, yes, it affects everybody, but it's also the least influential thing. You have the least control over it. So on the local side, we have had some interesting things happening with marijuana and that becoming a recreational drug, and there being some local crony capitalism. So if all you look at and you're saying, oh, Trump, I hate Trump, it's all corrupt, all of that on the national level, well, look no further than your local state government for some corruption. And here's the story. The story is that when marijuana became a recreational drug, they became lobbied by the alcohol companies as far as distribution is concerned. So the alcohol companies came to them and said, you know what? We're the only ones that really know how to distribute things that, you know, should be kept away from children, so it should be sent through our distribution channels. Okay, so somehow that got pushed through, and they agreed to that, and alcohol companies became the distribution model for marijuana in Nevada. However, recently, you might have read that there is a shortage of marijuana in the state of Nevada. And that's not true. There is no shortage in the state of Nevada. We have no shortage of something that you can grow. It literally grows on trees, or on plants, on shrubs. So there is no shortage of it. However, there is a distribution problem, because all of these companies that lobbied to say we should have exclusivity on distribution, it should only be alcohol companies, they decided not to distribute the marijuana. I'm not saying this is necessarily their intent, but it certainly looks like they might be protecting their bottom line and hoping that pot doesn't replace alcohol so that they don't distribute it to their customers. And so we're seeing this crony capitalism take place right in our very backyard. Got anything on it?
I mean, I think you surrounded it. It's right. It's unfortunate that that there's crony capitalism. Of course there is, right? You know, it's Nevada. And it's no surprise that the people who are in bed with Governor Sandoval were able to finagle their distribution path right onto a bill. And they were able to ensure that they are the only five companies in Nevada allowed to distribute marijuana. And it's unfortunate because the governor had to declare a state of emergency for the marijuana distribution problem. And in fact, I'm going to be attending a panel later about the legalization of marijuana hosted by an organization called NORML, N-O-R-M-L. And I'm going to be asking that question if I can. I'm going to try and ask them and find out, what was the incentive for this? Because I know for a fact that, I mean, I'd get a truck tomorrow and haul marijuana around. Do you know how much money there must be in that?
Tons.
I mean, they raised something like $3 million in tax revenues the very first, like, 3 days, and they're out. Well, yeah, of course they're out, because you didn't allow the free market to decide how many distributors are needed and to what refineries. You know, so it's already bad enough that only medical dispensaries are allowed, only medical dispensaries are allowed to distribute them for the next year, and then others can apply. So that's already bad enough, but then add to that the whole five distribution, you know, list, and it's only the alcohol distributors. Like, they don't have an incentive not to. Yeah, it's silly. The alcohol people, they know that people would generally prefer marijuana on a legal playing field with alcohol, because in some ways it's a much better gradual high. You don't have a same side effects. You don't get hung over. It's a lot. You can't die from marijuana overdose.
And now they're set up to take a cut, no matter what. Even if it does blow up, they are now locked in to take their cut.
So even if they lose, they win.
Yep. No matter how they play it, everyone's so concerned about these monopolies out there, but it's important to realize that the monopolies that are being granted are granted by the government. They're not granted. In very rare cases do you see a monopoly that is based solely on competition. And when you see that monopoly in place, you should probably shop there, because it means they're providing better services at lower costs than anybody else on the planet. And it's usually very, very rare, because somebody else can come in and take that business model, and then there's more competition. Monopolies basically don't exist, with the exception of one primary monopoly that grants all others, and that is the state. So let's look at one other area. In fact, let's look at the freest market that we've probably had in my lifetime, and that free market is the internet. So the internet, basically completely unregulated. If you ask anybody, they'll say, well, there's really no problems right now. However, there was a national day of action around net neutrality recently, and so here's the concern. Here's the pitch that is made, and why everyone's in an uproar about net neutrality. So the concern is that they're going to prevent certain traffic or slow certain traffic from getting to you, and then let other traffic get to you faster. That's the concern, right? So they're worried that, well, everything that Comcast owns is going to come through really, really quick, and everything that Netflix distributes is going to go really, really slow. Well, here's the thing. You have already been paying for faster internet or slower internet. The net is not neutral. If you haven't realized it, like, your cell phone is using the internet, and you pay for a plan based off of how much traffic you're going to be using. And this podcast pays for a very specific type of server so that I have better internet service. If I didn't use that specific type of server, which I have to pay more money for, then the website would go down every single time everybody downloads a bunch of podcasts, right? So I should say that I would love the idea of this net neutrality, but what's really going on here is there's some very specific companies that have a powerfully vested interest in net neutrality. Those companies include Apple, include Google, include Netflix. And you might say, well, why would those companies be involved? And they're the biggest distributors of media on the internet. So that's YouTube. Google owns YouTube. Netflix is obviously the king of killing cable.
A third of the bandwidth of the internet. Insane.
It's right? Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And Apple's iTunes with distribution of music, movies, all of that things for direct download. So these are the companies that are really, really pushing this. Facebook too. Facebook isn't, because they're making a play at YouTube with all the videos. So there's all of these companies that deliver great services to you, and they're the ones that are concerned about net neutrality. However, imagine that we're on a freeway, and that freeway is privately owned, which the internet is kind of privately owned. Like, you can have your own distribution. So you're on this freeway, and this one company decides, I'm going to use a third of the freeway. I'm just going to use a third of it. And the freeway, the owner of the privately owned freeway says, hey, you know what? You're doing a lot of damage to our freeway. You're causing a third of all the damages. Like, I'm going to have to charge you a little bit more than I'm going to charge everybody else because you cause a lot of the problems, right? You're a lot of the traffic. Another example would be the clubs here in Las Vegas. You know, they don't necessarily, not all the clubs want a high distribution of men to women. They want to even that out. So oftentimes, ladies drink free, right? They do that. They're charging the men more to try and equal out the supply and demand. That's just how it works. So what these companies are doing, what Apple and Google and Facebook and Netflix, what these companies are trying to do is they're trying to take the cost that they're going to incur by using so much of the internet, and they're trying to pass it on to you. So if you're going out there and having a day of advocacy saying, hey, I want to make sure that it's neutral, you're being duped. You are. What's going to end up happening here, if a lot of these bills get passed, is you are going to have to pay to make sure that everything is copacetic for these companies. I'm assuming you're not using half of the bandwidth of the internet. They are. And you're going to end up putting the bill on the taxpayers rather than on the companies that are using that directly. So don't be a fool. Let the internet be open as it is. Let it be a free market as it is. You want a real open internet? It has nothing to do with net neutrality. It's a con.
I totally agree with you there, and the only thing I'd like to say in opposition to all of that is, since I agree with the majority of it, is that the government, unfortunately, regulates the monopoly of those who provide cable services.
That is the big problem.
And that is the principal concern of why we would need a net neutrality. But I would like to point out that net neutrality is basically the government solving its own problem that it caused. So, yes, am I quote-unquote in favor of net neutrality? Well, sure, if we're stuck with only one or two choices for cable companies because of permits and licensing and this sort of thing, well, yeah, of course. But if it was truly a free market and I didn't like that Cox slowed down this service or Comcast slowed down that service, I could choose someone else. But I can't, right? Yeah. I have one cable coming into my street. I have one cable coming into my house. If I want to be on the internet here, I got one choice. And that means they can charge basically anything. They can slow me down to whatever speeds they dictate. And I have no option to take my business elsewhere. So that's my concern, is that the government caused this problem. We wouldn't even be talking about net neutrality if we had an open and free, unregulated market of cable companies. And these cable companies can't just dig up the road and not repair it. I mean, people act like they're just going to go through and string cable across the street or something. I'm not talking about that, right? They still have to pay to put it in the ground. I get that. But all that's happening now, as I think Tyus was alluding to, is currently today, all of those people who use the internet are paying us. They're paying to subsidize the cost of the internet for Netflix, Facebook, Google, people who use together probably 60% of the internet. All right, so you know you're paying $85 a month. You should be paying $50, and that $35 is going to offset the cost of Netflix, which you may not even use. Maybe you don't use Netflix. Maybe you're my grandma and you sit at home and you use Facebook once a day, and you comment on my photos and go, oh, you know, my grandson, right? That person is paying $35 a month, let's say, more than if they if there was not a net neutrality, there was a free and unregulated market for cable companies. And so I guess in conclusion, if the government would just get out of the way of all of it, I'd be happy with it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right with the point that they have granted monopolies, so they're trying to fix the regulation that broke things by implementing more regulation. And I've had conversations with friends where they say, well, you just kind of keep correcting it. You keep having to steer back and forth and back and forth trying to fix this problem that you created by creating that problem. And eventually I look at it and I just say, no, you default. You say, we screwed up and I'm sorry, Comcast. Maybe I gave you an exclusive. We made a mistake. I'll pay you damages, but we're too bad. You can't have a monopoly anymore. Those shouldn't be in place. That's what we should be fighting for.
Yes.
That's the real answer to this problem. The answer is not to force everybody else to pay. And I know you might be thinking, well, I do pay for Netflix, so I am paying my part in that. Well, you're right. You are paying your part to Netflix, but if things like this go through, everybody will be paying their part for Netflix, even those who choose not to use it. So Netflix is probably not going to lower their prices. They're probably going to keep the prices the same and just enjoy the subsidy.
Yeah.
And if, on the other hand, if this is truly really expensive to them and becomes a major issue for them, they'll raise their prices. And if somebody can do it better, they'll compete. Free market. That's the way it should work.
And something that I'd like to add just from a technical standpoint is that Netflix does a really poor job of compressing their video streams across the internet. And this is widely regarded as the reason why people are in opposition to net neutrality, is because people like Netflix could be using less, but they choose not to because it's simpler not to. But if they had an incentive, if they were being told, look, we're going to slow you down until you fix this, until you use less bandwidth, then they would have an incentive to, you know, iPhones, Androids, they're fast enough now to decompress. They can store up a buffer of what's coming, and it uses less of your data plan. I mean, it's win-win-win for everybody except for the companies that have to implement better software engineering practices and better compression methods.
Yeah. It's not necessarily Comcast that becomes the bad guy for saying, we'll slow you down, and you don't even need them to do it. The truth is, if it's completely open, Netflix, if they're not doing it efficiently, somebody else will come in and do it better, and they'll win. But if we always say, well, Netflix is going to be subsidized, it makes it incredibly difficult for the second company to come in and ever compete with them, because they're getting everybody's tax dollars right off the top. They're getting paid no matter what. Don't let that happen. Don't be a fool to the marketing that you're seeing. And of course, that marketing is coming from the most powerful companies on the planet. These are the companies that control what you see on the internet. Of course, it's an easy message to buy into. I don't blame anybody for buying into it and not seeing the bigger picture. But I hope that how we explained it, I hope that comes across to make you understand that just because everything you read on Facebook, well, Facebook has a vested interest in getting your money, in getting your tax dollars, and this is going to be a great way for them to do it. That's going to wrap us up as far as time is concerned. Thank you, Alex, for being here again.
Thank you.
And until next week, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.